Hi everybody. Welcome to the 100-pounder meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Today is April 3rd, 2024, and I'm absolutely delighted today to introduce our speaker, Heidi B. Heidi first came into OA in 2003. She was born in Manhattan, in New York, and now lives in Brooklyn. And she is going to share her experience, strength, and hope with us. Heidi, take it away, my lovely.
Thank you, Rita. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, as Rita just said, I came into the rooms in 2003. I was 25 years old. I had a 10-year-old son. Story for another day. I had already lost my father 6 years before to alcoholism and drug addiction, and my mother was quickly declining from this disease. At that time, the reason I came in is that I had just had weight loss surgery. I hadn't heard about OA yet, and I was working for a doctor who was friends with a bariatric surgeon and thought it would be a great idea, and so did I. I was so excited. I thought, finally, here is my answer. Here is, you know, what I've been waiting for my whole life. And I was really looking forward to having the surgery. And one of the things that they do when you have any sort of surgery is they send you through a battery of tests. One of those for this particular surgery was psych evaluation. And when I saw that psychiatrist, he said, you need to see someone for your compulsive eating, for your emotional eating, he said. And for whatever reason, in that moment, I thought that they wouldn't let me have the surgery if I didn't. So very soon, within a week after I had the surgery, I was visiting with a counselor, and she was the one that told me about OA. So literally just out of surgery is when I went to my first meeting. I will say, and I'll, you know, I'll just put in a disclaimer that this is my experience. I didn't have a great experience with the surgery. I found that I was having food stuck and throwing up all the time. And I actually ended up really using that as a way to binge and purge when I realized that I wasn't going to be able to eat what I wanted to eat. And the fact of the matter is that I have a disease, and no human power, right? There's nothing that I could do externally that was going to take that away. And so the surgery was not the solution for me. And it wasn't a good tool for me either. I do know that it can be a good tool for people. And so, as I said, this was just my experience. To fast forward a bit, actually, Rita, I don't know if you want to share my pictures, or I can share them as well. But I think it's a good place to just sort of jump in and do that. Okay, so that first picture in the upper right hand corner was just right after having had the surgery. And then you'll see what happened for me is I lost about 70 pounds with the surgery before I quickly began to gain it back. And then I did, you know, and of course, the funny thing was that I wasn't really excited about working the steps in OA while I was losing weight, right? There was a certain urgency that left me as soon as I started to lose weight. But it did come back, and I did work the steps, and I lost weight through a food plan and the steps in OA, and I got down to a normal weight, which is what you see in that next picture. And then you can sort of see that, you know, by 2018, I had gained all my weight back again. And by 2021, I was, that was right before I came back into the rooms. I had started coming back to meetings, but that was 10 days before my abstinence date. So I've just had a 3-year birthday. But I was near 300 pounds in that picture. I was miserable. I was in pain all the time. But more than that, I really wanted to die. I just, I did not want to go on. I was in such mental, emotional torture with the disease. And you know, the worst part about it is that the food stopped working for me, and I couldn't stop eating. And through that same counselor that had introduced me to OA all those years before, I finally got the willingness to come back into the rooms. I had been out entirely for about 6 years in relapse. During that time, my mother had passed away, and I was having all sorts of trouble with my son. The last time I saw him, he had been escorted out of my home by the police. And so there's all these things going on. And if you had asked me at that time, I would have said, look at my life. Of course I eat. This is why I eat. I have learned since then that that is not why I eat. And whether or not you've had trauma or any sort of you know, history in your life of those sorts of things, well, for me anyway, right? That has that, or whether I had grown up in a perfect family, I still would have been a compulsive eater. Just to sort of get through the pictures really quickly, you'll see just these last couple years. That first picture was at the OA birthday party, where I met so many of you that I had met only on screen, and it was just wonderful. And you can see I'm smiling and actually happy. And then in the following picture, you see me on a snowmobile. That was a work trip where they took us to Courchevel, France. And, you know, the reason that that's so significant is because I would have never tried something like that before. And what this program has done for me is it's given me a second chance at life. And I'm actually living life now, and infinitely happier. In August, that is me with a sponsee in Montreal. And then this past January, that was this last birthday party, again, with a bunch of fellows whom I love dearly. And so we can take those down now. Thank you so much, Rita. So I came back in 2021, and I, as I said, I was really miserable at that point. And I had had my step one experience, I think, but right before coming into the rooms, I had been eating. And as I said, I couldn't stop, and it wasn't working, which was just so painful. And I would lay on my couch night after night and was spending more food, more money on food than I could afford. And which is crazy because I live in New York City and I work in finance, and New York City is the finance capital of the world. And you know, I make a decent salary, and there was no reason that I shouldn't be able to pay my bills, but I wasn't paying my bills because I was spending so much money on food. And so I was buying all this food out, and just on the couch, having binge, waiting for time to pass so I can eat some more. And that's how I spent my evenings, you know, for I guess it had been years at that point, but it was certainly progressively worse. And I was in physical pain, and I remember just like glaring outside the window night after night. My couch is right in front of my balcony window, and so I would just stare out the window all the time, and I just felt like I was in some sort of purgatory. You know, I was just like in suspension, and I was not living life. I wasn't part of life. And I knew that sort of, you know, outside the window, life was happening, but I wasn't part of it. And you know, and as I said, like, I didn't want to be alive anymore. And I wasn't prepared to take my own life, but I really, like, every day was like, God, it would be great if I could just like get hit by a bus. Like, that's really where I was. Anyway, I did come back in, as I said, after that same counselor said something and shared something with me that got me willing. And what she shared was that she herself was in a 12-step program, and I don't know why exactly that was it for me, but you know, she's someone that I had been working with for a long time and respect very deeply. And when she shared that, it just sort of broke something for me that gave me the willingness to come back in. And I had been
10 minutes,
working.
Amy.
Thank you. I had been sort of, you know, behind the camera, shoveling ice cream into my face. And not being part of the meetings. And then I finally saw someone that I knew, and you know, picked up the phone and actually called somebody. And that person was so very kind to me, and I was just very struck by their kindness. And so it just started to soften me. And so I'll fast forward a little bit, but I had seen someone share who shared their pictures, and I saw a very, very significant transformation. And that's part of the reason that I also share my pictures, because it was a significant message for me. And when I called her, she had said that she was available at the time to sponsor. But when I called her, she had already she wasn't available anymore, because it took me about 3 days to call. What she said to me was amazing. She said, but I'm going to, she was a younger person. She says, I'm going to hook you up. You know, I won't call this person and go to this meeting. And that phone call changed my life, because it brought me into meetings like this one that are strong in the big book, and carry a message of real hope and recovery. And so what I've learned since that point is some really important things. One, I learned about entire abstinence and what that meant for me. And I had never heard that term before. I heard people talk about being recovered, and I had heard that once or twice before in the past, but I remember thinking how arrogant it was that someone should say that. I now know that our book says that right from the cover page. And I heard, and maybe this is the most significant thing, I heard that this book was written as a set of instructions for how to find a relationship with God. And through the 12 steps, you know, that's what I've done. And I really didn't like the idea of God when I came in. I was actually, you know, I say I was violently anti-religious when I came in. And you know, but that gift of desperation when I came back and was set at such a low point in 2021, you know, you become open. And the good news is I didn't have to have any particular conception of a higher power. I didn't have to believe anything in particular. And I didn't have to believe anything in particular to proceed through the steps. You know, our step two says we come to believe, and that has been my experience. I have come to believe. It's been a process, and it continues to change and develop. What my experience has been is that my relationship with God has grown through experiences of God in my life, through seeing, you know, through trusting and turning things over, and actually seeing God working in my life. And you know, the very first and easiest thing to point to is that I put the food down. And, you know, having come from not being able to stop eating, having, you know, spent night after night in complete misery, to be able to put the food down was in it of itself a huge miracle. And I've seen many, many miracles, and I was able to look back and see other miracles in my life, you know, since then. I guess I'd, you know, just to refocus for a minute, the studying the book, you know, I had read things in this book that I didn't see the first time around. I had looked, you know, I'd worked with the big book before, and now I saw that it says that we are given precise, specific, clear-cut instructions. And I was like blown away by that, because I'd never looked at it that way. And so my experience now of like actually reading this book as a set of instructions and following the instructions has been revolutionary. I have, you know, I've just, it's like unbelievable to reread this book with that set of lenses and see that they are literally telling us exactly what we need to do. And it works. You know, that's the amazing thing, is that it works. And I, you know, I worked with a sponsor who took me page by page through the book. And I did what she told me to do. And I think that's the other part of like the gift of desperation, is just, I just did what she told me to do. And I shut up and, you know, kept my opinions to myself, because, and this is true even today, I'm someone who very quickly forms an opinion about an experience I haven't had yet, right? You know, I came in the first time and it was like, I see God on the wall, and you know, and I see people, you know, sharing about their experiences. And my first, you know, my first reaction is, they don't know what they're talking about. They're insane. This is a cult, and, you know, they're sheep, and, you know, whatever, right? Like, I have all these opinions coming in, not having had the experience yet. You know, and I'm so grateful today that I can say I've now had this experience and I know that they're real, right? Like, as it says in the doctor's opinion. And my experience has proven that that this disease is real, because I didn't believe that either, right? You know, when they said in the book that we have this allergy and that it results in this phenomenon of craving, I thought, well, you know, they're using that as analogous, but really, I mean, it doesn't really mean I have an allergy. But you know what? My experience is, I really have an allergy. When I put certain substances into my body, I cannot predict when I'm going to stop again, because I can't stop. You know, that physical craving sets off something in me that, you know, I can't stop. And then once I do stop, once the disease is done with me, I can't stop myself from starting again, which is the mental obsession. And I do have both of those parts of this disease. And it needed to be my own experience. You couldn't tell me that enough times. You know, I had to experience it for myself. And it's been the same thing with the recovery, is that, you know, I study the book and I listen to other people and it gives me good information, but it's not until I do it myself, it's not until I have the experience, that I know that it's real, that that I, you know, truly take it into my heart. You know, page 30 is one of my favorite pages. And you know, it says, right, we had to concede to our innermost selves. And it wasn't until I conceded to my innermost self that I was truly a food addict and a compulsive overeater, that I was able to actually take the steps. And, you know, it talks about delusion and illusion, and illusion is a lie. You know, that's the definition that I have written in my book. And the delusion is believing the lie in the face of evidence to the contrary. And that's what I had been doing my entire life, was living in the lie that I could control this, and the delusion that, you know, that I still could, even when I had proven to myself over and over and over that I couldn't. And so, you know, as I said, I worked through the steps with a sponsor who took me page by page. And I have experienced the miracles and promises of this program, and my life is entirely different. You know, I say that when I came in, my baseline was complete misery. I was just depressed and miserable all the time. And today, my baseline is actual happiness. And I say that genuinely, like I am genuinely happy today and I'm so grateful. And that doesn't mean that everything is rainbows and unicorns, right? Like life is so hard. Life keeps happening. Life keeps happening and that's really annoying. But it does. And I will just share that one of my recent experiences, and I see that I'm coming up on 10 minutes, has been, yep, thanks, Teresa. Last summer, my 10-year-old nephew was diagnosed with leukemia. My nephew and my niece, who's 17, have had to have bone marrow transplants in the last 6 to 8 months. My entire family, my brother, his wife, and their three kids have just been through complete hell. And I've, thank God, I'm abstinent today and I can be of service. And I've been there the entire way to the extent that I could be, that I could show up and be helpful. But it's been really hard, it's been really hard. And it's like, life keeps happening and it's, but I get to show up and be of service and I get to feel my feelings, which is also really annoying, but I can feel my feelings and I don't have to eat over it. I don't have to eat over it. And it's such a blessing. I'm so grateful. A couple weeks ago, I had been helping with caring for my nephew after his bone marrow transplant while my sister-in-law was in the hospital with my niece who was having her bone marrow transplant, and I was needing to transition out of that care that I had been giving, and I'd been actually living with him. And so I was coming back home and I just had such deep sadness about that, about needing to leave. And, the thing is, right, like I think that I need to save them, right? Like I need to be there. They need me. I can't leave, and I just was really sad about needing to leave. And I was really sad about leaving my nephew. And I could, I could feel that and just be in complete, like just a sobbing mess, with my sponsor and, working through that and knowing that I needed to leave also for, for my own self-care. I had been living there for 2 months and was really like giving more than I had, right? And something that my sponsor said at the time that was just like, it just hit me and I think about it all the time, right, is that she said, we show up and we do God's work, not God's job, right? And I had tried to cross that line in this particular situation by being the savior here. The miracle that happened is that as soon as I left, within 3 days, my family was provided a solution for care, which actually resulted in them being able to go home. They were not staying at home because of just complications around my nephew and niece being immunocompromised because of their transplants and such. But they were given a solution that I was standing in the way of by being there all the time, right? And it's just like, it just continues to be revealed to me over and over how God works in my life and these miracles happen. And I only see them in retrospect, some of them, right? But when I just do what I'm guided to do, right? And when I show up and be of service and not try to fix things, God steps in and things just work themselves out. My hands don't need to be over everything. And as I come up on 5 minutes, I do want to just share about step 12 a bit. I'm quite big on doing service. And if anyone here knows me, you will know that about me. Again, probably to my detriment sometimes, but I'm quite big on doing service and I'm quite big on sponsoring. I really, truly believe deeply that we have to give away what we've so generously been given. And this is such a huge gift in my life. And I get to keep it by sharing it with others. And like the really amazing thing is that I actually want to, you know, I know that the big book tells us that we're not supposed to be evangelists about this thing, but when you have had an entire psychic change, when your life has been completely uprooted and changed for the better, it's really hard not to want to share that miracle with everyone you meet. And so I try really hard not to be a preacher when I work with my sponsees. And I try just to share my experience, strength, and hope, you know. But it made me think about, and this was something I read the other morning in meditation. So I hope it's okay to share. It's Dr. Bob's final talk, and he spoke very briefly at the very first AA conference. And he was, you know, he was ill at the time and he died very shortly afterward. But what he said, and I will not read it in its entirety, you know, he said, there are two or three things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with the Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is and we understand what service is. So let's bear those two things in mind. Sorry. Let us also remember to guard that erring member of the tongue. And if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing, and this is my favorite part. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to do numerous little kind and thoughtful acts in our behalf. So let us never get such a degree of smug complacency that we are not willing to extend or attempt to extend to our less fortunate brothers that help which has been so beneficial to us. And you know, like, sorry, I didn't expect to get so emotional, but it really is at the core of everything for me is that this has been such a gift. And I really do, you know, I really do want to share it with everyone and anyone that I can. And, you know, the thing is, right, that you can only share it with those who want it. And you've probably heard some of our members who speak often say, right, like, it's not for people who want it. It's not for people who need it. It's for people who do it. And, you know, part of my service work, again, right, is I do God's work, not God's job. And if someone's not ready, they're not ready. And that's okay. It took me 20 years to be ready. You know, that's just where I was. And that was my path. And I respect that. I respect where people are today. When they are ready, you know, I do believe very deeply that it is my job to make sure that the lights are on when you get here, right? Like it's, and that's why I do so much service, and that's why it's so important for me to sponsor. It's my great pleasure and responsibility to make sure that the hand of OA is here when you come and you're ready. And I guess I will just leave it there. Thanks for letting me share.
Oh, Heidi, thank you so much. And I just wanted to read out a bit of the big book just to follow on from that. Chapter 7, just the opening paragraph. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is a bright spot of our lives.